be able to share if I would let y'all take.
Hello, my name is Andrew and I'm an addict.
Hi, Andrew.
I'd like to welcome everyone to WACNA 1. We'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. NA has no musts, but the hotel has some rules. We request that guests under the age of 18 are accompanied by a parent at all times. Please ensure they are not left unattended at any time. Areas that we particularly want guests to pay attention to are the swimming pool, fitness center, and entrances of the hotel. Our hotel is 100% non-smoking. Therefore, please ensure that no one is smoking within the facility. There will be designated smoking spots outside the hotel where smoking is allowed. If a guest smokes in any of our rooms, a fine of $300 per day will be applied to the credit card in the reservation. Pets 25 pounds or less are allowed. Pet fee of $50 will apply. Pets have to be kept on a leash at all times. And I've asked someone to read who is an addict.
Are we going to go there?
Yep.
Oh, my
God. Yay! Yeah.
I'm Randy and I'm an addict.
Hi, Randy.
Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life in thinking, our whole life in thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death.
I've asked someone to read, what is the NA program?
Hi everybody, I'm Althea Griffin, recovering addict.
Althea.
What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship of, or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We're not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
I've asked a friend to read, why are we here?
Hi, my name's Diane. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hi,
hi Matt. Why are we here? Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. Most of these methods, none of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced and continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
I've asked a friend to read the press and identity statement.
Hello, my name is Michelle.
Hello, the identity statement.
In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. Press statement. As our 11th tradition says, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addicts. Members of the press are often attracted to our convention, and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press approach you, please direct them to the convention information booth located in the lobby of the convention center. Thank you.
I'd like to thank all of the readers.
At this time, to share his experience, strength, and hope, we have Rich from Mount Vernon.
How you doing, family? My name is Rich, and I'm grateful for coming out.
What up, Rich?
Hey, Rich.
Oh, I'd like to welcome a newcomer. If you're new, stay. This program works, and we do recover. First, I'd just like to thank the God of my understanding for another day clean. Just take a minute so God can get in me, so that way y'all can hear from him and not from me. Ooh. Again, fam, my name is Rich. I'm a grateful covenant addict.
Hey, Rich.
Oh, I was asked to share on keeping the focus on my own recovery. And I wish I could stand here and tell you that I always did that. But if I did, I'll be telling you a lie. First, I'd like to share with you, I have 5 years, 4 months, and 2 weeks clean. I got here by way of a crack, on speed dial, the fast way, you know. Just a little bit to let you know how fast it was. Actually, I was an addict at a real early age, you know what I'm saying? My father was an alcoholic. My mother was a church woman. I chose to stay with my father and ended up drinking beer at a very early age. So, you know, alcohol was like one of my first loves. And it was funny because my father was my idol. As a kid, he was a garbage man, and you know, my subject is keeping the focus on myself and my recovery. And at that age, you know, I idolized my father because he used to always come home with money. He used to always come home with something that he would either get from work. I don't know if y'all know anything about sanitation men, but they come home with something every day. He would have something that he didn't pay for, you know, and I idolized that, you know, and as a kid at an early age, I always wanted to be like my father, and I went everywhere with him, you know what I'm saying? I mimicked him. You know what I'm saying? So when it came time for me to go to high school, you know, I went to high school. I was still drinking, and I got introduced to weed when I went to high school. So I smoked a little weed, and I remember I had an older brother that was like he was like a terror and always used to fight. So my mother thought it'd be best that she didn't send me to the same high school as him. So she sent me to a all-white high school. And when I got to that high school, first of all, I didn't like it because I was different from everybody. But I was a good sportsman. So I played football for 1 year. When I played football, that's when I got introduced to, you know, what the white people was doing at that time, and that was pills. I got introduced to pills in Briarcliff High School. That's an experience that did not take long for me to decide that that's not what I wanted to do. I mean, I took some pills, Quaaludes, acid. And I'm talking about, I found out when you take a pill, whatever trip is getting ready to send you on, you going on. You know, and I didn't like that. You know what I'm saying? Because you can't stop them trips. You got to take the whole ride. You know, so that was real quick for me. You know, and as soon as my brother got kicked out of school, I ended up leaving that high school. You know, and I'm sharing that with you to let you know that I had no high school education at all. I went to high school just to finish sports because I knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. I wanted to be like my father. You know what I'm saying? I was focused on it, and the teachers used to tell me in school, they said, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're going to end up being a janitor or a garbage man. And I used to tell him that's exactly what I wanted to be. You know, so all I did was hang out in the halls. When I turned 18 years old, I didn't graduate, of course. You know, they told me I couldn't play no more sports. So my father gave me a choice. He said, either you come to work with him, or I had to go into the service. He gave my older brother the same choice, and he ended up in the service, and I went to work with my father. So at 18 years old, I was a garbage man. You know, that was my dream. So I thought I had arrived. I was 18 years old, I was making good money, you know, and I'm still just smoking weed and drinking. So I ended up buying me a brand new car. I had my own place. I moved out of my mother's house. You know, you couldn't tell me nothing. I was the man. You know what I'm saying? And I did that. I worked for a long time under the same conditions, just smoking weed and drinking. Until, you know, I got a hold of the wrong crew. And this crew was sniffing coke. That's the crew that my father tried to keep me away from, you know. But, you know, as time went on, once I hooked up with them, that's what I wanted to do. So I started sniffing cocaine with them. You know, next thing you know, I found out, because I was a shy guy, so I found out that with the coke, you know, I didn't have to know how to talk to girls, because the girls wasn't in the picture up until now. Up until then, once I seen how easy it was to get girls, I started keeping cocaine on me. So now I got the coke, the weed, and the alcohol, you know, and I did that for a minute. Then the bass came. Now once the free bass came, that's when everything started going downhill for me, you know. Everything started crashing. I started not paying the rent. You know, this car got repossessed. You know, but I still didn't think I had a problem. But I knew something was wrong. You know, I knew something was wrong. So what I did was, and I narrowed it down to the base. I said everything was okay until I started smoking this base. So I ended up going to my job and I told him that I needed some help. And my father was my boss. I need to share that with you. And I told him, I said, I think I need to go away. And he was like, my father, being an alcoholic that he was, he told me, he said, look, he said, you know, you need to leave that stuff alone. He said, look at me. He said, all I do is drink, right? So I said, yeah, you know, but he was right. So I went to rehab, and I came back out, and I had to stay clean for 2 years for my job. So I didn't do nothing for 2 years, but I had a reservation. The reservation was that I was fine all the way up until I started smoking. So I said, I ain't gonna smoke this time. So I started drinking again. And I drank for a long time. But I had to have a half a gallon with me at all times. I had, everywhere I went, the liquor went with me. 10 years later, I used again, you know, and I got back into the rooms. And that's when I started getting, that's when I surrendered. I surrendered in, it was June 16th, 06. And I got a sponsor. I did everything y'all told me to do, you know, and, but it was just something about, you know, keeping the focus. Like, I never could keep the focus on myself. I was always worried about what everybody else was doing. And I always compared myself to everybody else. You know, it wasn't until I really started utilizing my sponsor that I found out that I was a I thought that I liked to help people, but what she told me was I was a people pleaser. You know what I'm saying? And I thought I was just a nice guy, you know. And it was hard for me to help. I could help everybody but myself. So I really had to learn. I had to learn really how to take care of Richie. Because I knew how to take care of everybody else. And what she did when she started me with the step work, you know what I'm saying? That's when I started finding out who Richie really was. And it was real deep, because I didn't know who I was. You know, it started with the first step, with me admitting that I was an addict, admitting that I had a problem. And when I got to the second step, it told me, you know, that I needed. She told me that I was getting ready to be in a battle, right? And that I needed to get a God of my understanding, because I was getting ready to fight a power that was greater than myself, and I needed a power to fight the battle. And so that's what, at first when I came in here, I didn't really have the God concept, but I used the group. I used the group, I used my sponsor, I used everybody that I could just to have some kind of hope that I could stop, because I didn't think I could stop using. You know what I'm saying? And that's the only thing I wanted to do when I came in here, because I was fine. I still had my job. I still had my apartment. You know what I'm saying? These things, I smoked for 20-something years, but I still have my job. So I came in here and I compared myself to y'all. I said, I'm not like them. And I compared myself right back out the door. Yeah. It wasn't until I started really realizing that, you know, and I started learning how to listen. And I started, then I started hearing your stories, and I was like, yeah, I did that. And I started realizing that maybe I do belong up in here. And that's when I really started recovering. I started recovering when I realized that I had a problem. You know what I'm saying? And that's when I started focusing on Richie. And I'm going to tell you, when I got to the third step was so important because I was a person that never, ever asked nobody to help me. I didn't know how. If I was drowning and I seen you standing there, I would not know how to ask you to help me because I never asked for help in my life. I'm not even going to say in my life, but since I was 18 years old, because I've always had what I wanted, and I never needed nobody for nothing. So I suffered because I didn't know how to ask for help. It wasn't until I got to the third step where I realized that without somebody helping me, I was just going to continue to suffer. I thought I could do this program by myself, but I found out that I couldn't. You know what I'm saying? And that's because I didn't know how to focus on myself. I focused on everybody else's recovery. I said, if you do it, maybe I can do it. But I didn't know that you had help doing it. I thought everybody was doing it on their own. I had no idea what sponsorship was. Sponsorship is the heart of this. And my sponsor kept on telling me, Richie, you need to keep the focus on yourself. And I used to go to her with everything else. My girlfriend problems. You know what I'm saying? I have a fight with my girl. She'd be like, What part did you play? It got to the point where is that everything that came out of my mouth, she would say, what part did you play? So now, what I stopped doing was going with her with them kind of problems. Now I'm just going, if the only thing I want to know is, how do I stop? How do I stop? How do I stop getting high? That's it. That's the only thing I focused on since I've been here now and with these 5 years. I realized that without the God of my understanding, right, that I'm nothing. I learned that even when, once I turned my will over, right, it keeps me out of a lot of people's business. See, because that's what it all boiled down to, was minding my own business. Not worried about what you're doing, not worried about what she's doing, but just worrying about how I can recover. And once I started getting that together, that's when I started recovering. You know, when you talk about keeping the focus, it's like, wow, it's so much. You know, when I did a six step, I got so much things wrong with me. You know, my defects, and it's hard for me because, like I said, I had no schooling, so I used to just have to hear things over and over and over again. I was one of the people that I wouldn't ask you for help. You know, I wouldn't tell you that I can't comprehend nothing when I read it. So I had to get honest. And I had to start telling people, yo, listen, how do you do this? How do you do that? You know what I'm saying? I got humble. And once I started getting humble and I started asking for the help, that's when I started receiving the help. Y'all told me a closed mouth can't get fed. You know what I'm saying? And what I realized by that is, if I don't tell y'all what my problem is, you can't help me with it. You know, and that right there made a total difference in my recovery. Because once I started fixing my lips to ask people to help me, to ask people when I don't know something, and stop trying to let my ego keep me from getting the help that I need, I started to recover. I need to tell y'all that now, I was out of work for a while, and I was getting ready to get kicked out of my apartment, and I had to ask people for help. You know what I'm saying? So I went to the rooms, and I started asking people, you know, because I didn't know what to do. I've been working for 30-something years, and I never had to ask nobody for nothing. So when my job, like, and it's not that I didn't have a job, is that the work is so slow now that I was out of work for like 7 months. My bills got backed up. You know what I'm saying? I was in a position that I have never been in my life. And when I went to the rooms and I asked, it was people in there that told me, well, go here, go there. And so I went to social service. You know, social service would not give me no money. They wouldn't give me no money, but they gave me a benefit card. You know what I'm saying? That benefit card, they gave me $90 a month, but you know, and that was a lot for me at that time, you know. And then at about 2 months after that, my son got into a car accident and he got killed, right? So y'all told me you don't find out where your recovery is until something happened, right? I was devastated. No job, and my son got killed. The only thing that saved me was that I was a meeting maker, and y'all told me when something happens to pick up the phone. And I picked up my phone when I got that phone call, and I called another recovering addict. And the recovering addict told me, don't hang up the phone. Stay on the phone until somebody get there. 5 minutes later, somebody was at my house, and I have never been alone since then. You know, I need to tell you how this program works. And I also need to tell you, from that day on, right, my focus have been on my recovery. You know what I'm saying? It's nothing in here. It's nobody. You know, it's no nothing that's going to deter me now from staying clean. If I can stay clean for that, I can stay clean for anything. You know what I'm saying? I ran to the other fellowship, I need to tell you, because I this power that kept me from getting high, because I knew it had to be a power that was greater than myself. I needed to find out more about that. When I came in here, y'all told me to learn my disease, right? And I found out that my disease was me, you know? And I learned that, and I learned how to beat my disease, you know what I'm saying, with the God of my understanding. So now what I do is I just divide my time up, and I'm not endorsing religion. This is a highly spiritual, this is a highly spiritual program, and I had to go to find out, man, why that happened. You know, why that happened, man. Like my son was a good boy. He was in college, you know what I'm saying? He was a junior. He was on a football team. He had 2 championships. You know, I got 2 rings from him. You know what I'm saying? And then one day he's just gone. You know, for the newcomer, if you don't think this program worked, you know, believe what you see and not what you hear. Because when somebody died in my family before, the first thing I thought about was, it was party time. I have never went to a funeral sober. Me and whoever got high in my family, we met at the liquor store, in the room. We had places that we would meet. This was the first time that I went to somebody's death in my family clean. You know, so it can be done. You know, and I learned that from in here, from y'all telling me that y'all went through it. You know what I'm saying? Everything I learned is from this fellowship. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wish I could sit here and quote from the book. But like I said, I have not the education. But I do know that the help is in the rooms. Anything I want is in here. I got a big heart, and I try to spread it as much as I can in these rooms. Everything I got, everything I do, I predicate that to the fellowship. You know what I'm saying? And I always share with the newcomer that, you know, you don't have to be a brain scientist to work this program. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to have a high school education. You don't have to have a college degree. You know what I'm saying? Because the fellowship is all on who you know. You don't never know who you sit next to up in here. You don't never know where your help is going to come from. Anytime I need some help, you know, I got friends that in this fellowship that you'd be surprised the positions that they hold once they leave outside the door here. You know, they tell us to leave our degrees and stuff at the door. But one thing I know, once you leave up out of here, you know, they put them back on. And them are the people that I gravitate to. You know what I'm saying? Because I know I learned how to ask for help in here from the fellowship. You know, so when in closing, right? And when I tell you to keep the focus, I keep the focus on myself. You know what I'm saying? It just helps me to realize that I can't do this alone. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get this gift for myself, right? It's just about helping somebody else. You know what I'm saying? And as many people as I can help, it comes back to me tenfold. You know, if you're not helping nobody, then you need to check your recovery. With that, my name is Rich. Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, thank you so much. At this time, to share her experience, strength, and hope, we have Barbara from Westchester.
Oh, Barbara.
I'm Barbara Q, and I am an addict.
Hi, Barbara.
Soul Survivors is my group. Richie, thank you. Hard act to follow, Richie. Let me first say I'd like to thank Westchester's convention. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. When I came in, my clean date is 9/16/89. When I came in, my sponsor had me doing service. And I remember when Westchester area used to be up in Tarrytown, and it was crazy, it was intimidating, because it was a room full of people and there was all this discussion going on, and I didn't understand it. But I stand here today because of that. You know, I was with Richie, thank you. I was thinking about, you know, some of the things you had touched on about keeping the focus on recovery. And my focus has changed over the years. In the beginning for me, it was simply about just keeping the lights turned on. I did not come in here to get clean. I didn't connect the dots. I came in here because I was in, I was like in a corner, all alone. I remember chanting. I tried all kinds of ways and means to get clean, except for going to a detox and a rehab. So we're talking about an addict in denial, you're looking at one. And so be if my divine intervention for me was someone coming back from my past who was clean and took me to my first meeting. I looked around the rooms, I saw some people that I hadn't seen in a long time, I thought they were dead, and they were sitting in Narcotics Anonymous. And I was like, wow. So there's this one brother in particular, you know, he's no longer with us, he crossed over, but God bless him. I remember stepping over him out in the streets. And I said, oh, let me call his name. Susan, you remember Kenny. I said, now if Kenny can get clean, I know I can. But it wasn't even so much that I know I could get clean, because I still hadn't connected the dots, but it was the fact that if he was a productive member of society, then I stood a chance. But again, I saw that, you know, I saw the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and I said, I don't need to do them all. They're for you people. I don't even really want to stop. I just, like, kind of lost the knack for using, you know. I'm from the generation of free your mind, your ass will follow. I've done it all, you know, and I don't, and not to brag, but I'm saying, you know, it's all about that, you know, being intellectual. You take some acid, you know, and you talk about the politics of the world, you know, THC, you know, all of that stuff, right? And then it's a funny thing. I had friends that was on dope, and I didn't want to do dope because I thought it was nasty. So I'm going to try cocaine because they said at that time in the 70s, cocaine wasn't addictive, right? Plus, you know, the up echelon was doing cocaine. So, you know, that's who I was, right? Little did I know that, you know, this whole thing about, what is it, image? Image and facade and all of that brought me here because I wanted to look like, you know, I was on top of the world. Interestingly enough, I did drugs for a long time. I had a son, you know, I had a decent job. I moved out and was pretty much, you know, along my peers as someone who had it going on. But as I began to use cocaine more and more, and I didn't understand the progression of the disease, you know. And then I began, like, for me, I liked shooting cocaine. And then it became a thing of, I remember I ran into a friend of mine's, and I'll never forget this, and I have to give you the description because this is what really captivated me, talking about the focus, right? She had a fur coat on. She ran, you know, she came up to Westchester and went in them OJ cabs. She had some diamond rings on, and she looked like money. And this is somebody I grew up with, and I hadn't seen her in a long time. And I was like, yo, what's up? And she was like, you know, she got a spot downtown, da-da-da-da-da. And what opened for me was, as they called it then, base. And I'll never forget having, you know, I think it was the 8-ball, and I want to shoot it, and that's at the time when you mix it with the ether. And I was like, I can't shoot it now. So that was my drug rehabilitation, is what I'm telling you, is I stopped shooting cocaine to start smoking it, you know, and that was it, you know, and I'm talking about like maybe 18 years of using drugs and like maybe 7 years of base, crack, you know, and it was over. So again, that's where I felt, figured I lost my knack for using. So if I can stop this and just do this, and you know, they, and all of this I learned in the rooms was about changing your seats on the Titanic and all of that. I have changed the kind of liquors that I've drank because like I couldn't drink white liquor because it made me violent, you know. So, okay, enough about that. Now, I come into the rooms again to get the lights turned back on, and I begin to hear things people are talking about from their heart that I always wanted to talk about in the spot, but you can't talk about. Because don't nobody want to hear it. The only thing you want to talk about in the spot is what you're going to do. That you never get done because you're stuck in the spot. Or you're stuck in the spot copping, right? But I continue to come and I would use and I would drink and I would share, you know, I'm clean, I got 30 days clean and y'all would clap for me, you know. And one day I put it together that I didn't have no clean time. Because if I hadn't drank, then I had sniffed. But what I began to understand was that I liked coming to the meetings. I used the meetings to keep my paycheck just 2 days longer, you know. So, again, my focus has changed in my journey. Because, again, first it was just to keep the lights on. Then it was just to keep my sanity, you know. Because another thing that I stayed in here for was because I had noise in my head. And I couldn't tell anybody, I was afraid to tell anyone because I thought I would get committed. And what I understand now is we all talk about the noise. And it's gotten so much quieter since I've stayed. You know, then I put some time together and I looked up, I had 90 days and I was like, wow. And then, you know, my sponsor had me begin to do some service. And so my focus was on accumulating those keychains. You know, now I got the 30-day, the 90-day, you know, I want to get the keychains because
back then, everybody used to wear keychains, you know, all down, or have them hanging in your car and all of that, you know.
So that's where my focus was, and that kept me coming, right? You know, and then it was the love in the rooms. You know, it's funny, I came in here, I was a grown woman, my sponsor was younger than me. And I remember my sponsor told me something real slick, and I said to myself, does she know who she's talking to? And I remember trembling because I really wanted to, like, read her the riot act. But I wanted what she had. I wanted to be clean. And that was my first dose of humility as well. So I kept coming. In my first 90 days, a lot of things happened for me. My 16-year-old son was back in my life who hadn't been in my life for like about 9 or 10 years. I mean, I always saw him, but I didn't have custody of him. Now his father dies. And now my focus is on being a mother to a 16-year-old. And I need the women in the rooms to help me through. I also needed the men in the rooms to help me through, too, because I needed to talk to a man about how do you raise a son, you know, that whole male thing. And the brothers experienced strength and hope about just navigating through. So then that was my focus. I needed to stay connected to you know, to clean people who had been through the streets and who survived and who were productive members of society. That was my focus, and that kept me coming. I remember one day waking up and saying, wow, I have actually accumulated some, like, vacation time. I've been on time. I haven't called in. I haven't killed my family 10 times over. You know what I mean? You'll never believe what happened, you know, kind of thing. And there was a real good feeling about that, a really good feeling. And that, too, became my focus of just being able to show up. You know, my mother, who used to tell my brothers and sisters, when y'all leave, she leaves. Don't leave her in here. My mother gave me a key to the house. So now you know I'm going to keep coming because things are beginning to get better. They really are. Now, I didn't think about a white picket fence or anything like that. But the fact that on a Sunday morning, I'll never forget, I was coming from, I think Elmsford had, at the time, had that Sunday group out in the park. And the birds, I used to hate the birds when I was using them. On a Sunday, you know, coming out the spot, you're stuck and crusty, and people going to church, and, you know, and I'm trying to hide, and it was real ugly. But now Sunday mornings are a beautiful thing. The birds are chirping. I'm grateful. Looking up at the sky, you know, I'm not hiding. You know, I'm just, good morning. And you know, it's a beautiful thing, and none of these things that I speak of could I have ever hoped for in my first NA meeting. None of these things. Today I keep the focus on my recovery, you know, and it's like to the best of my ability. Okay, let me, because I'm not perfect. And I can wander off, and I will tell you that I have wandered off. I've done some things in recovery. I've done some things that the book said don't do. You know, I've committed some crimes of passion in the fellowship that, you know, I've been talked about just as I have talked about other people. You know, and that too has kept me coming because, you know, where else can I be free? Where else can I be loved through? You know, but here. There's been a part of my journey where, you know, I've had to accept myself for who I am, where I am. And meaning that I have looked, you know, I have looked around in the fellowship and said, you know, I wish I could be like that one. And I wish I could be like that one. And for a little while I came so that I could try to be like that one and that one. And I found myself to be as I am. And I focus in on that today, because it's not about what I don't have, it's about what I do have. And what I have is really, it's a peace of mind. I have a peace of mind, I have respect, I have love, you know. And you know, those are all the things that I've always craved for. Always craved for, to be accepted, you know, to be loved, for somebody to listen to me, you know, for somebody to want to confide in me, which is a true honor. I'm grateful. The fruits of my recovery are like endless. They're endless. And it's a struggle sometimes. It's a struggle. Because sometimes I want to get in my own way and say, well, I want to do something different. And when I veer off to the left or to the right and I hit a wall, that will bring me back on focusing on my recovery, trust me. Because my threshold for pain is not what it used to be. You know, my threshold for insanity is not what it used to be. You know, and it's taken me a long time to get here. You know, there was things that, I have a friend who teases me. I still have a tendency to like to go out at night to Pathmark. I like to go out really, like, you know, I want to make a 10 o'clock ice cream run. And she tells me that's old behavior. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I may get better. But understand that I'm still holding on to that 10 o'clock ice cream run. Yeah. You know, that's my insanity. But, you know, I'm not, you know, doing some other things. Yeah, exactly. And it's not about using, but I could be using, or I could be getting used. And I've done that too, you know, but I've gotten better. So keeping the focus on my recovery is a journey. It's a trial and error. It's about finding comfortability. It's about growth, you know, and it changes from day to day. I am so grateful for this fellowship. And again, you know, because I'm not a long talker, but I just want to thank the committee. And I'm really glad to see that Westchester has made its mark on having its first convention. But before I close, I do want to say something to the newcomer. No matter what, you keep coming. And I'll tell you what they told me. If your ass falls off, put it in the bag and keep coming. Right? There is nothing that will happen on this journey that getting high will change. There is nothing. It won't bring your mother back. It won't bring your lover back. It won't, you know, it won't stop the eviction notice. It won't stop the car from being repossessed. Just don't use, you know, and it will get better. So with that, I'm Barbara and I'm an addict, and I say thank you.
I think we can form the circle now. Yeah. And we have